goes inside the 10, the 5. Oh, the play of the year in the NFL.
CBS, Jim Nantz on the call there. Of course, what sealed it yesterday for the Buffalo Bills. Nantz calling it the play of the year. I guess if you consider the opponent and all that. I mean,
it was the biggest regular season game of the year, and it sealed it.
So that puts it in there. Yes, it was the biggest. It meant the most. Like, Lamar Jackson 2 weeks ago had one of the more ridiculous touchdown runs I've ever seen in my life. But considering the circumstance to end a team's undefeated campaign, yeah, I'll give you the biggest run of the NFL season. Welcome in on a Monday, not a Victory Monday. First time I cannot say a Victory Monday since before Christmas after Christmas last year.
And reminder, that was 11 months ago. That's the last time we came in on a Monday and they lost.
Yes.
Gross.
Yes.
11 months ago. Really, I shouldn't complain. If 11 months ago. You know how much has happened in our lives in 11 months?
Uh-huh.
And the Chiefs haven't lost a game during any portion of that stretch. I think we'll probably survive today.
It is Cody and Gold hanging out here on a Monday. We'll take your texts and calls throughout the show. 913-586-7965. That's the Jay Southland Tow Service text line. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Reminder, coming up at noon, we're going to hear from Andy Reid exclusively on your home for the Chiefs, 96.5 The Fan. But obviously, look, the undefeated season, the campaign is over. No longer discussing that, no longer chasing that history. The ultimate prize of a three-peat is still intact. But I don't think yesterday is hard to figure out. Like, it's not, there's no mystery on how the Chiefs lost this football game. I think it was very clear, as we discussed last week, knowing who Buffalo is, knowing how the other eight matchups, or seven, I guess,
correct,
matchups had gone, you knew the margin of error was going to be really, really slim. And point blank, the Chiefs made way too many mistakes to win a football game like that on the road. They just did. And one of them, of course, in particular, happened right away. I mean, the Mahomes interception
second
immediately.
Second play of the game.
I mean, it didn't take long.
And it led immediately to a touchdown. So pretty much went about as bad as it could.
In that regard, yeah. I mean, look, the Chiefs, did they have moments where you could have seen the tide shifting and they could have gained control of this game? Sure. But in what area do you feel like the Chiefs actually played better than Buffalo? You know what I mean? Like, where?
They didn't. Maybe extra points.
Okay, fine. Okay.
Nailed it.
I'll give you that one. I'll give you that one.
Crushed extra points.
I think that's it.
Honestly, it's a weird game because when I look at that, they did not outplay Buffalo in a single area, but they were not massively outplayed in any area either. Does that make sense? So, like, before we get into the nitty gritty, the reasons why they lost it, there is no way this show and the way we've acted during this run is going to make me panic over a road loss to one of the two best teams in the AFC in week 11 of the season for your first loss of the season. If you put it in perspective, this is the most obvious loss of all time. Before the season, Gold, we both counted this as a loss. Coming into the game, I wouldn't have been surprised if they lost. We thought it was a could-go-either-way game. Chiefs made a mistake early, tried to catch up from that mistake pretty much the entire game, and couldn't, is really what it boiled down to. Couldn't quite make up the gap from chasing their tail, from being down 7-0, a huge, I know it was 6-0. Then it was 7-6, and then they just kind of trailed the rest of the game by a little bit. This game was as close as I thought it would be. It was a battle between Titans. These are the two best teams for a reason. I expect to see them again in January.
Yeah, and the two best quarterbacks in football, and Josh Allen, whether it was the game-sealing touchdown run or otherwise, he was really, really good yesterday. Thought they had him on the one mistake. He hadn't made that kind of mistake, the one interception. Thought that was going to be a huge point to swing the game. It ended up not carrying the momentum over. But, you know, there's, as I said, a lot of reasons the Bills won. And I still think maybe the biggest yesterday was, if you were to compare, and we'll talk defense specifically in about 25 minutes, but you compare what the Bills were able to do in terms of winning one-on-one matchups against the left tackles, left tackle, Wanya Morris, and right tackle, Juwan Taylor at times, in the pressure. Russo and Oliver, the entire Bills defensive line, 37% of the time they got pressure. And they weren't having to bring the house. They weren't having to blitz corners off the edge or anything like that. And that was a huge difference between these two teams yesterday. But yeah, I'm with you. I think there's the real conversation of, like, hey, yesterday the areas that were, I don't say exposed, they were known concerns, and they took advantage of those concerns. Nobody should be sitting here today acting like, oh my gosh, the Chiefs now can't beat Buffalo in the playoffs. No, but we knew they had an issue at left tackle. That popped up again. We knew that losing Jalen Watson was going to put more pressure on Nazee Johnson, number two corner. And
it did.
Where did the Bills attack? Those were the two areas the Bills took the most advantage of in a very close football game. I understand the final score is 31-21, but this was a one possession game for 98% of it.
I think when you go back through one of the things, and so like this is what's supposed to happen. Josh Allen's a great quarterback. He's the second best quarterback in the league. If you force me to start a franchise with any quarterback that wasn't Patrick Mahomes, it would be Josh Allen. Part of the game yesterday was very simple. Josh Allen beat you. Josh Allen lived in third and long in that game. It was 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9. Like, it was working fundamentally. Things you're supposed to do defensively to win football games. And he beat you. He took advantage of it. He still converted those, even though it was 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9. The Chiefs tried to blitz and blitz and blitz and couldn't get enough to Josh Allen to prevent him from essentially beating them on those things. And so, like, if Josh Allen's going to beat you, I'll live my life. Defensively, it's the first time, and this is the other part, it's like, it's the first time getting up 30 in 30 games. So, like, yeah, and who did I think it was going to be? Josh Allen. Of course it was going to be
Josh
Allen.
Well, and that's why the fourth down run is was so frustrating. What, you know, give credit to Allen for making said play. It wasn't a design run or anything. But whether or not, I know that we'll hear from Andy, I'm sure he'll be asked about the play again at noon. That run, whether they had a spy, didn't have a spy, it sure looked like they did not have a spy on that particular play. Josh Allen saw it and was able to take advantage and ends up finding the end zone there. That was just super frustrating because one of the most predictable results on the 4th and 2 was that Josh Allen is likely taking off, whether designed or not. That's, I think, why I was kind of, you know, what was so infuriating about that particular play. Yeah, there were other mistakes that ultimately put them in that position to where they were a 4th and 2 conversion away from sealing the game. It ended up being a touchdown. But like on that was like, anybody at home, you don't have to be that smart of an individual. You can be the most casual fan. If you watch that game and you know anything about Josh Allen, you're like, 4th and 2, what scares you the most here? Josh Allen's legs. And that's exactly what beats you at the end.
I know that it seems easy on paper and we're all like, yeah, obvious, but that's another reason they didn't lose. The Bills have lost a lot of important games to the Chiefs. Sometimes because Patrick Mahomes just beat him, the same reason Josh Allen just beat him yesterday, right? Patrick Mahomes just beat us. Josh Allen just beat the Chiefs yesterday. But going forward on that 4th, it is easy, in my opinion, to talk yourself into that field goal. You're sitting there and you're like, ah, screw it. Let's kick this field goal and we go up 5. We go up 5 and we just keep them out of the end zone for the final 2.5 minutes. They kick that game, they lose. Patrick Mahomes goes down, scores a touchdown. We all know how that story ends.
But that's why Buffalo's different. You know, we're going to talk later about the AFC as a whole. But what you just said, that's why the Bills are, I view them differently, despite the playoff history where the Chiefs have owned the Bills come playoff time. And I understand, you know, the Josh Allen compared to Joe Burrow in the playoff head-to-head thing that we always bring up historically. But what the Bills did yesterday, I don't know how many other coaches have been hurt enough by Mahomes to do that.
Because they played 8 times now in 5 years. Sean McDermott, they have been hurt enough.
Sean McDermott said it after the game, like basically acknowledging we have seen giving the ball back to Mahomes what he will do, whether it's 13 seconds. In this case, it would have been a minute and a half, minute 50 or whatever it was going to be at that point. They knew they couldn't let that happen again because they've been burned by it time and time again. That's why the Bills are uniquely in this spot versus, I'll even say Baltimore, if we want to say in the past, Cincy or Houston, if they see him in the playoffs, or Pittsburgh. And I think Mike Tomlin might be smart enough to do it because he's a hell of a coach. But a lot of coaches would have just taken the field goal. Sean McDermott, maybe 5 years ago, 3 years ago, in fact, I know he would have because he did. 3 years ago, he would have kicked the field goal. Not anymore. And that's why they're a little more dangerous than the others, because they're willing to do that because they've been beat enough.
Yeah, and that good for them, I guess, is what I would say. You know, like, I get it that they've gotten, like, do I panic? And I don't even think, I think Buffalo used to care about this regular season win. The way that we joke about, like, oh, Cincinnati won their Super Bowl, or the Raiders won their Super Bowl, and all the teams we would joke about for all those years who, like, this was the end-all, be-all of their season goal, and we'd be like, oh, congrats to you,
well,
I guess.
I saw the golf clap from Travis.
Oh, yeah, he's like, all right, good for you. I think, truthfully, I think Buffalo knows. They're like, hey, look, we're glad we got the win. It keeps us alive for the 1 seed. We're not claiming it's nothing, but they know I mean, Josh Allen in the postgame field report, if you saw him, he's like, this is just one. He's like, are you sure it's just one? I mean, you know how much this game means. He's like, it's only one. Like, what more can I count it as?
Yeah, it's massive for number one seed. Massive for the number one seed. It doesn't, you know, the Chiefs would have won in this thing. The number one seed is over. Instead, it's a little interesting now down the stretch, to say the least. But yeah, they all know. I think Bills fans are smart enough at this point. If they lose in the playoffs, whether it's against Kansas City or against anybody, frankly, before a Super Bowl, then this doesn't mean a damn thing. But we are still in November. We're not in the playoffs yet. And so we're talking about the results from yesterday. And the Bills were clearly the better team yesterday. And the great debate will be if they rematch in January is, are the Chiefs better than they were in November, and who's healthy? They had injuries. The Chiefs obviously have plenty of injuries. That's what will be fun about if we get a rematch in January, is these two teams are not going to be the exact same teams as they were now in January.
I think that's what makes it fun. I mean, and again, like, I watched that game and I'm assuming you feel the same way, where it's just like, this is a heavyweight fight. These are two teams battling to the death. This time they got it, and that's okay. But it does... I think it's almost impossible for it to not soften the blow, knowing what you said to open the show, which is, this is the first time we have come on the air in 11 months following a Chiefs loss. 11 months. We made it almost a full calendar year without coming on this show and being like, well, they lost. You know, like, it doesn't, like, in the grand scheme of things, it can teach you about yourself. And I do think that there's some truth. Not that I think that they... I'm far from the conspiracy theorist in this. No, I do not think they lost this game on purpose to take away the heat from the number one seed. No, I do not. You know, there's a million conspiracy theories.
They didn't want
around.
The perfect season anyway, no, Cody. They just didn't want it.
They thought it looked too clean. I don't think any of those things are happening. Do I think losing the perfect season takes a little heat off? Yeah, I do. Do I think that there can be a little benefit in losing that game? Yeah, I do. Will I feel that way if this ends up costing them the number one seed? Hell no. Absolutely not. Because if this is the game that cost them the number one seed, really the next 3 weeks for Buffalo, they're on a bye next week, the next three games for Buffalo will determine
the
one seed kind of goes, because their final three games are the Jets twice in New England, I think, or New England twice in the Jets. It doesn't matter.
They got San Fran, the Rams, and then Rams in Detroit on the road. So I think we'll know in about a month. For sure.
If the Chiefs are going to have to win out in order to keep it.
The pressure thing on the undefeated, I don't think that would have become a thing until, how do they handle that tough three-game stretch in terms of days, games in a certain amount of days around Christmas with Cleveland, Pittsburgh, and Houston. That's when, if you're undefeated, I think how they navigated that would have been interesting. How they would have navigated, of course, the final game of the season if they were undefeated, although I think it would have been an easy decision at that point. Now, that if you want to say it's easier because of that, I guess, but... Now, this idea of, like, they were intentionally, you know, not spying Josh Allen on the last play because they want to save it. Like, I call BS on that. Are there looks the Chiefs didn't show? Yes. Are the Chiefs going to learn from the loss? Of course. Is Buffalo going to learn from even in a win?
Yes.
Of course. But this notion, like, if the Chiefs knew that having a spy on the 4th-and-2 would have worked, they would have done it.
Yes.
like,
are you kidding?
Like, Chris Jones. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people are talking about Chris Jones. Like, hey, he didn't hold his rush lane. And then Josh Allen saw it, took advantage. Sure. Josh Allen made a great play too. Let's acknowledge what he was capable of doing.
Second best quarterback.
But I just don't buy the, like, they knew something would have worked, Cody, but they said, screw it, we'll save it. No, they will have different looks, but it doesn't mean they intentionally didn't do something that would have won this game.
The only conspiracy I'll buy into is they waited to unleash Xavier Worthy until the Bills game. Just to rub it in their face. But really,
no, why was DeAndre Hopkins only getting 50% of the snaps?
Weird.
We're going to get into that a little bit later on in the show.
Weird. But let's talk Worthy for just a minute, because this is now the third consecutive week in which they have missed a big play by Worthy by a margin that makes it frustrating. On Friday's show, you weren't here, but on Friday's show, Drew can attest.
Did you throw up during the show when I was...
I was
worried about you.
Okay.
On Thursday, you left early, and then I saw you were back Friday, and I was like, oh boy, we might have a live puke on camera.
I was a little concerned.
Cody was looking out for me and brought me a Sprite, so
I did.
Thank you again.
For the fan club, I brought him a Sprite instead of a drink.
Perfect. Settle that stomach.
I was really trying to take care of him, you know? Little Sprite, just to make sure he's okay. On Friday, I had said, if they don't get the D pass to Worthy this week, I'm quitting it. I'm giving up. I'm not going to say that it's as in I keep saying, like, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. Just you wait. Here it comes. And then
you wanted him to stop.
No. I was going to be done thinking it was going to click.
Okay.
That's who I was. But honestly, that one was so close again. I'm back. I can't believe
every week
how close they are. Here's how I rank them, and I'm curious how you guys do. 3 weeks ago, 100% unworthy, get your damn feet inbounds. Last week, I thought it was on Mahomes. Terrible throw on the sideline. Had nothing to do with Worthy running himself out of bounds. Just a really bad throw from Mahomes. This week, 50-50, my friends.
Yeah.
A better throw means Worthy doesn't have to get his feet in. But get your feet in. That is definitely a two-way street on that one. And I know Mahomes talked about it, and we can play in just a minute. The frustrating end that is, these plays are inches away from being 40-yard gains or 50-yard touchdowns or 60-yard touchdowns. And there's two more earlier in the year that exist this way. He's half of these catches away from being like a 550-yard receiver right now. And not a single one has clicked. And it's starting to get really frustrating.
Sure it is. I'm sure. Well, if it's frustrating for fans, imagine how frustrating it is for both of the two people involved, and Mahomes and Worthy. And yes, from a stats sheet and box score watch, think how much different the numbers look for each one of them on a day by, you know, on a game by game basis or season long. This one was absolutely on both. I think so. You know, the frustrating thing is it changes this game yesterday to I mean, it's a guaranteed touchdown. It should have been a guaranteed touchdown. So It changes the entire complexion of game when you end up losing 30-21, or if they have the touchdown. There's so many what ifs you can have in any given football game. I guess your hope has to be that will they click? If the Chiefs are to three-peat, like I think it's hard to believe, if the Chiefs go to three-peat, it means to me almost by guaranteeing you right now in November, on November 18th, it means the Chiefs hit on one or two throughout the playoff.
The playoffs.
Or they almost have to. Like, I think they will almost have to if they are to get back to a Super Bowl. And they are close. Can they get the timing, footwork, spatial awareness? Can they get that down by the time they get to the playoffs? That should be the only goal right now from that pairing. And we were prepared. I mean, for a while, the first drive where the offense looked good, it was the Xavier Worthy drive. I mean, he was their best offensive weapon for
a
while.
Great.
He was about to have a breakout game. If he catches that one instead, we're talking about having 120 yards receiving and a touchdown. We're having a completely different conversation. But
part of the problem is that was his only last start of the game.
And maybe, you know, give the Bills some credit there. Yeah. They finally said, hey, we're not going to let this guy keep beating us.
That's fair.
But listen to Mahomes after the game.
I mean, it's probably just me just throwing it more inbounds to a guy that's wide open for a touchdown. So if I throw it inbounds, it's a walk-in touchdown. No, I just have to be better there.
Mahomes, the vet, he's going to take responsibility. And some of them have been on him. But he's also going, he's not going to let
hang his
rookie out to dry there.
It's not Aaron Rodgers.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Very true.
Yeah, look, it's frustrating, no question, because a lot of these have been so close. I don't know when they're. Cody, I don't know when they're going to connect. I would have thought yesterday was the day, especially with the way things.
It seemed
like Worthy had really progressed, and I still actually believe yesterday, if we're stepping back away from the loss and this one play, there were some other signs. The contested catch from Worthy that I think is really promising. Yesterday, that was his best catch he's had as a pro.
Yeah,
but the easy ones sometimes as a rookie can be a little challenging.
I understand, and Mahomes is not wrong. A perfect throw means that Worthy scores a touchdown there. A perfect throw really does. But like at this point, I think we got enough evidence that like he drug his foot like he knew he was supposed to, just like 2 seconds too early. You can't drag your foot until you have your hands on the ball. I think what happened is, and this is like rookie stuff, and this is where little coaching stuff at wide receiver will go a long way for him and help in a big way. He was doing all the motions, but he started it all too soon. What happened with Worthy on that play is he's doing everything he's supposed to, but because he drug his foot too soon, he then reached for the ball too late, which made his foot come up and he couldn't. Like, it's all just the like little technique things that if he gets those things right, he'll be a significantly better player. Look, maybe Rashee Rice spoiled me in the sense that I should expect rookies to make mistakes that rookies typically make, because Rashee Rice was really good at a lot of those things.
Yeah, they weren't going down the field to Rice. You know, they were crossing routes, underneath routes, and yak. You know, we're talking about Worthy connecting on.
And those are harder to get right.
Deep passes, timing has to be, you know, nearly perfect. You definitely have to have awareness of where you are on the football field. Mahomes, of course, has not been perfect on those over the last year, I would say. You know, last year was mainly the flat out drops from MVS and Kadarius Toney or whoever.
MVS just had another 70-yard touchdown.
Again, about time, you know.
What the hell is going on in New Orleans?
Aaron Rodgers, not good enough for MVS. Mahomes, not good enough. But Derek Carr has unlocked something for MVS.
He's got the third most receiving yardage since he signed with New Orleans.
Yeah, crazy.
He's like up there with just like with Puka and like superstar.
Riz has the Saints rolling down there, you know, two wins.
Oh, yeah. What's that guy's name?
Riz. Riz.
Now you're just saying that, like, he has Riz. That's for sure.
He's Riz.
I'll say that. He's about to get that job. Worst thing the Saints could do. He's about to get that job, and they're going to hate themselves for it.
The interim coach, man, every time, is
undefeated.
I think they're smart enough not to do that because it never, but yeah, Coach Riz is undefeated. Darren Rizzi.
Like you're saying, I think they're smart enough to do that. They literally just did that.
I know, but
their last coaching hire was an interim coach hire.
But that's the point. It didn't work out. I would think they're smart enough to realize that whole thing doesn't really work.
Then maybe Riz shouldn't stick around.
If they did, for whatever reason, keep somebody who's in-house, it's got to be Kubiak because he's with Derek Carr in the offense. They actually look really good. With anybody else,
they're stuck with Derek Carr. I'll say that. They got no choice but to keep him around.
Thinking of coaching, there were a couple moments yesterday where I was about to like stand up off my couch and like give a round of applause to Andy Reid.
I wanted him to go fourth and one.
There was
so
a fourth and one on their own side of the field, and I was like, he's actually going to do this? And then they tried to get the opponent to jump off, which like never works, by the way.
I will say a fake QB sneak was never going to convince
them. They took the penalty. They didn't waste a timeout, so I'm okay with it. It was a penalty. It ended up not being a big deal, but we're going to pretend we're going to actually snap it. Like, when does that mean? It's got to have like a 1% success rate or
maybe
less in the NFL. And yeah, because you don't even have a QB sneak in your arsenal.
How he was lining up. Like, he was going to run a QB sneak. Like, they don't believe you.
The defense should point and be like, we know there's no chance in hell your coach is letting you do that.
I always wonder if, like, I guess as a defense, you have to kind of line up because part of me wants to just, like, have a defense rub it in their face and just be like, not even, like, get on the line. Like, I dare you. Do it. Please.
I'm still waiting at some point. I'm still waiting. One day, we've all said, oh, they might do it in the Super Bowl. I'm waiting, and I think I'm going to be waiting for a very long time. As long as Andy's that coach, I don't think Mahomes is doing the sneak.
And I know the Bears lost, but just do the Justin Fields thing. Justin Fields came in because they knew they wanted the rushing ability of a quarterback late, and it should have worked, but Justin Fields slid down too early.
Steelers,
against the Steelers, sorry.
Or with the Steelers.
Not the Bears, with the Steelers. Yeah. But so, you know, do that, right? Like, just bring Carson Wentz in to run the QB sneak if you want the yard. The one that killed me was, I do not understand why Andy Reid did not go for two when they scored the touchdown lead. Do I understand the butterfly effect of the consequences that exist? Yes. But the simple reality is, if you get the two-point conversion, they have to choose to go for two.
Now, explain for context. Explain the situation.
So the Chiefs they score a touchdown, and they're down 2 points after they kick the extra point. Go for two, and they're down one. You're like, what's the point? If you get it, and you're down one. Now the Bills, with a touchdown and an extra point, can no longer make it. A two-possession football game on you, which means you need two scores at the end, rushing the entire action, similar in that final drive, versus on that end. If they miss it, well, they're still down two possessions. Nothing changes. They're down 9 instead of 8, and nobody cares if the Bills go down and get a touchdown and an extra point. I understand that the Bills can still go for two, and a lot of teams suggest you do. You're either up 7 or you're up 9. Yeah. So the Bills might have gone for two, gotten it all the same. But there's no risk in it for me, in which if you go for two, you at least open up the door that when Mahomes, late in that game yesterday, when he possesses the ball after Josh Allen completes that run, they are hypothetically only down 8. They're only down a single score to have to go down and score, which is a massive difference for me.
I get the thought process, totally get it. And you acknowledge this, which is, I think sometimes, though, like this was not just you. There was a lot of some other members of the media, too. A lot of people after Allen had the touchdown run saying, now, do you see why I think you should go for it? But like at the same time, and I know I give you credit. You acknowledged it when you were just talking a second ago. The acknowledgement has to be made that, like, the Chiefs weren't automatically getting the 2-point conversion. And if you're going to say, well, they would have been in the same spot, well, the Bills maybe approached their entire drive differently. Are they willing to run the clock more? Do they themselves go for two? Like, where sometimes people will say, and I'm definitely not anti-analytics and all that, and usually, in fact, quite the opposite, but in that scenario, I get why you would go for it. I don't think it's like this devastating decision not to go for two, though.
I think it's just a big swing late in that game. I think if it's early in the game, there's no real reason for it, but it's a swing in the sense that, you're right, the Bills can still go for two and essentially recreate the same thing, even if, let's just say, the Chiefs got it. But it's worth the risk for me. If it's that late in the game and you've just been dancing with this down two score thing all game.
I also trust my defense, who hadn't given up 30 points for 2 years.
I think that's what Andy says to himself. We're going to get this to where we can kick a field goal and win the game because our defense is going to get a stop. I think
they'll hold them to a field goal or they won't let them score.
I understand yesterday people are down on the defense because they, but let's remember, like, for we're going to get into this discussion on the other side anyway more, but, like, you know, that I get the logic on both sides. as long as both sides also acknowledge the consequences of doing it or not doing it. And that sometimes I feel like we on both sides with this kind of stuff act as if like there's not any other consequence either from going for it or the consequence, which we saw last night, which was not going for two.
If you don't go for it, though, like the consequence to me is smaller because you're down two scores. You're down two scores anyway, hypothetically, if they go down and score a touch anyway. You're either down two scores or you're down two scores. And I know that it's more detailed than that because the biggest swing that I don't think people who they don't go for it want to acknowledge is you're down two scores, but now you can no longer win the game on a field goal if you get the stop. If you don't get the two-point conversion and your defense gets the stop, you can no longer win the game on a field goal. You can only tie it because you're down three. That, to me, is the biggest swing why if you're making the argument for not going for it, that's the strongest argument for not going for two in that situation versus the, like, if you don't get in, you're down two scores and you're still down two scores.
Last night, we peel back the curtain during the game. We have, you know, our Google Doc open. We all add notes and, comments, opinions or whatever. And then that's how we build out our show.
And I put it there live as the point. So we're talking about it there.
Yeah. And so my thing was, like, I felt like, and there ended up being more time than I thought there was. At the time, I responded to you and I was like, well, to me, it's like, if they give up a touchdown or they're going to run the clock all the way down. Now, they didn't. They obviously scored with
2 minutes,
whatever it was. Yeah. But let's talk more about the defense because that was clearly part of Andy Reid's thinking. And let's discuss where this defense is at right now. I think some overreaction is happening. I'll explain why next. Back here on Cody and Gold, just getting started on a Monday. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Taking your texts and calls, 913-586-7965. I'm sure you guys have some thoughts on this defense because that's where I want to focus our attention. Now, we talked about the offensive issues and just overall what went wrong yesterday for Kansas City. But defensively, I think there's been a lot of attention on them post game based off of the game winning touchdown run for Josh Allen, the fact that they weren't able to get that stop in that moment. The last two drives of the game have been where a lot of discussion resides. And that's where, of course, the Chiefs gave up two double digit play drives. 10 plays, 83 yards over 6 minutes results in a touchdown for Buffalo. They gave up a 12-play, 70-yard drive for 5.5 minutes that resulted in a touchdown.
That's a tough end of the game defensively.
Yeah, and look, the defense finally gave up 30. First time since the Eagles Super Bowl. That's like 2 years almost already at this point. And it was clearly, I mean, there's no sugarcoating, clearly the worst defensive performance, I believe, in two seasons because of simply the fact that they gave up 30. At the same time, I'm not suddenly worried about them because of two reasons. One, as we just discussed, Josh Allen presents something that's pretty darn unique, and the Bills' aggressiveness is unique to them, in my opinion. The other part is, I do want to see, and I don't know if it'll work out or not, but how can I panic when I haven't seen this defense with Charles Omenihu yet? I want to see. So, like, the pass rush is less concerning than the secondary for me. Right, like Trent McDuffie still was great. They barely threw his way, nor should they, because he's one of the best corners in football.
Turns out last week when he got taken advantage of a little bit in one game, did not tell the story with him.
So the pass rush, I think there's a reinforcement coming that's going to help them out in great deal, and that's Charles Omenihu. The concern part I would have is more the secondary. If teams are going to say, we're not going to even throw towards McDuffie, we're going to pick on Nazi Johnson or Joshua Williams. The Jalen Watson loss, I think, maybe got undersold, and we found that out the last couple weeks. So if you want to say, hey, you're worried about the number two corner, 100% with you. But in general, I don't think suddenly we should think this defense is incapable of getting any stops. I want to remind you, there was a fourth down play where they got a stop in this game that resulted in interception. So acting like they're just not getting any stops anymore, I think is false. They had two drives to open up the second half where they got stops, and the offense really didn't do anything. It was a scoreless third quarter, guys.
Yeah.
Neither team scored in the third quarter.
Mm-hmm. I think what really stands out is, one, the pass rush. I mean, if it's like, it falls in a lot of ends where I think a number of teams fall in this category, which is, if Chris Jones doesn't win, who's winning consistently?
Yeah.
Who's cleaning things up if Chris Jones doesn't succeed? And the answer is no one stands out a ton. Like, I wanted that leap year for Karlaftis, and he had like a good month-long run, and then this was just kind of a quiet game. So what do I send myself into a tizzy? Felix Anudike-Uzomah is a perfectly fine rotational NFL player, but if we think he's taken any kind of leap forward, he hasn't. But you're right. I can count on the possibility of Charles Omenihu making this defensive line.
And Uche maybe getting more involved, too, because the guy had five snaps yesterday. Yeah. I would like to think they traded for him with the thought that he might work his way up here a little bit.
I think so, too, but also I was never going to like sell my soul for Uche turning things around because he got traded for a pick 2 years from now. Like, I
understand, but five snaps? I mean, that seems pretty low. I'll be stunned come playoff time if he's only getting five snaps.
That's even lower than I thought it was going to be. But I'm not even worried about him as much as I am Aminihue. And that's probably a month away. So the truth is, I'm probably not going to.
Oh, you think Aminihue's another month? Oh,
From playing.
Gotcha.
From playing at a level that changes the way the defense looks potentially. Fair. And so I'm really just going to start getting like a feel for it a little bit this week. And that doesn't give me a full answer for where they are. My question is, I thought early part of the season, this was a better defense than last year's defense. The last month would put that to a test a little bit where you're like, maybe not, right? Maybe that's not where they are. And if that's the case, because the offense is still just kind of where it is, 11th in points per game, they've been hovering pretty much around that 8-12 range the entire season long. Now the defense isn't the league's best defense from a scoring defense perspective. They're 8th after the performance against the Bills 10 games into the season. There are real deficiencies. And some of those could just be simply explained by injury. They're missing their number two corner. They're missing, they've been missing their second best pass rusher the entire season. Maybe that's just what it is. I still have faith that, generally speaking, they have been their best in the postseason. What stood out yesterday is they could not get pressure unless they blitzed. And when they blitzed, Josh Allen cooked them. So against a great quarterback, does your scheme of I'll just blitz the hell out of them on the downs I know I can and that'll frustrate them enough, does that work?
It didn't work
against Josh Allen. Does that work against elite quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen to me are the only two quarterbacks that are capable of doing that.
Of taking advantage of
that. Right? Because like if you look at the current, we'll get into the AFC here in a little bit, like potential playoff teams and all that. Like, you think about other quarterbacks, like maybe CJ Stroud, although his offensive line is not nearly as good as the Bills' O-line, so I don't buy that. Russell Wilson is not mobile enough at this point in his career, so you just keep going through the potential playoff team. Okay, the Chargers, maybe they're a wild card team. If Herbert's foot is healthy, we saw it last night, he can definitely move, right? Okay, so maybe he causes you some fits, but you're gonna see him two times before that. You've already seen him once, you'll see him two times before the playoffs, so maybe you have a better feel. So I think it's a unique Buffalo problem, and it's why, as we've said over and over, I think they're the biggest problem for them in the playoffs if they face it.
So I do wonder, and I've asked this question, I brought it up to you guys I think a couple weeks ago after the Baker Mayfield play. I think the defense is still good, and I'm not talking about them getting the stop in the third quarter stuff. I'm talking about the last drive of the game, where last year, every single time they had to make a stop to win the game, not even to allow, they wouldn't even allow points. They would get a stop, they'd get a sack, fourth down, turnover on downs, and the game was over, and the defense would win it. Baker Mayfield drives down the field, they go to overtime, the defense wasn't asked to do anything because Chiefs got the coin toss, they win the game, but the defense could have ended it there. Defense could have ended it against Bo Nix. They needed the help from special teams in the block.
Yeah.
But Bo Nix drove down the field. In this game, the Bills drive down the field late in the game, and they win the game. And of course, I know that they're 9-1. So again, they win the games. But I think, is it a concern where late in the game, the defense, are you as confident as you have been before that the defense is going to be able to get you that stop late in the game? Forget about what they do in the third quarter. But when it comes down to it, we've seen 3 weeks in a row now where it hasn't been the defense technically that's won them the game. It's been either special teams or the offense ended up winning them the game.
So as confident as last like December, probably not. Last January, probably not. Am I still confident that 90% of the time this defense is going to get the job done? Yeah. Now, that 10% margin has flared up the last 2 weeks, to your point. Sure. I think that's fair.
It's more of a late game thing to me.
Right. I get it, but it's hard for me still to be overly concerned. One, they were just playing a Bills team that is the third best team in all of football, I think, number one.
Chiefs, Lions,
and
Bills
last week,
teams,
I know you'll point out Bo Nix. One, I actually almost feel better about last week's performance today than I did this time last week, and the reason why is I just saw the Denver Broncos put up 30 plus on the Falcons, and Bo Nix threw for like 300 yards and four touchdowns. And the Chiefs defense, yes, it took a block field goal, but let me check Dusty's notes on the board there. They gave up 14 points last week, so it's hard for me to.
So they've given up 17, if they.
Well, I know,
but he's talking about the late game scenario.
I get you.
It has nothing to do with how many points it is. It's not about the points. It's regardless. when you need a stop late in the game, can you get the stop on defense?
Here's the mistake I think you're making. I think what's happening here, and this happens a lot in sports memory, is This is revisionist history. You are remembering last year's Chiefs defense as getting every single stop in the critical moment in the postseason. They lost six games in the regular season. They did not get every stop when they needed to make every stop. Didn't get a stop against Detroit when they needed to get a stop. Didn't stop Philly late in the game. Green Bay. These are all one-score games. Buffalo, the Raiders, they could have made the game-defining stop late in the game in those games and couldn't have done it last year in the regular season. They got beat because the defense couldn't get those stops even in low-scoring games. They did it when the postseason hit. That's when you're remembering, oh, it's Buffalo, and what are they going to do? Here comes the fourth down. Oh, it's Baltimore, here comes the stop. And there were games last year in which they did it, just like there are games this year when they got the fourth down stop against the Atlanta Falcons. Yeah. They've got three or four this year when the fourth down in the late game, they had to do it.
The ones I'll reference, though, are in fairness, I'll say for Drew, the one thing I'll give you, and this is why I think we've undersold losing Jalen Watson, some of those big stops happen prior to the Jalen Watson injury.
That to me is the
biggest concern right now. Almost other than left tackle, it has to be the number two concern with the team is the number two quarterback position. And that to me is why we've seen maybe the lack of the big stop at the end. But this defense, still, when I look at them and I look at the strengths of this football team, it's at the top of the list. It's not even close. And it doesn't mean they haven't had some questionable two-game stretches now or a two-game stretch now. But and I know you're talking about literally the last, like, you want them to end the game with, like, a game-sealing interception. You're right. Like, they're not doing that. That's for sure. But I'll just point, I keep going back, like last week, it is very hard for me to act like the defense just is not playing good. They gave up 14 points last week. How many times are teams given up 14 or less this year? Not very often.
I mean, that would make you the number one offense or defense in the league.
That's what I'm saying is they're playing good, but the off and you can blame.
They only had eight offensive possessions yesterday. Well, the Bills, give them credit for this.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, you can blame the Chiefs' offense as well for not coming up with anything in the second half when the defense was coming up time and time and time again. Eventually, though, this almost goes back to last year as well, where based on what we saw with the offense, they're asking. A lot of the time, they've been asking the defense to be able to win the game for them because they haven't been able to do it because of drops, because of sacks, whatever the case is.
Yeah.
Where not when is that luck going to run out? But we've seen 3 weeks in a row now where the defense hasn't been able to close the deal late in games. What is that going to change? Is it a time of possession thing? Is this now unlocking the key to playing against the Chiefs? Is they're going to hold us down? But if we control the game and we have time of possession,
I think it's unique to Buffalo.
It's going to make them. Hard.
I think it's unique.
They're not going to be able to beat us.
I think it's unique to Buffalo, though. Like that. That's why the Bills to me are the third best team in football, and why in the playoffs. No, it's not afraid of Lamar Jackson or now it's laughable to bring up, but Joe Burrow or anything. It's Josh Allen. And the Bills, because their coaching staff also has lost enough to Kansas City, they know how to handle these situations, and they were able to make the Chiefs have to play mistake-free football yesterday, and they obviously did not, and the Bills won.
Context also matters. The Bills are the number three ranked offense in the league, and Tampa Bay is the fifth ranked offense in the league. I mean, when you're asking your defense to make a stop, it's a whole hell of a lot harder to make it up against the best offenses in the league. And I get it. Detroit, Baltimore, Buffalo, these are teams you're likely to see again. Philly, whatever. Those are top 10 offenses in the league.
I know, but they didn't stop Baker Mayfield when he was throwing to Sterling Shepard and
K-Don.
So I think that to me is the one that stands out really the most. I get the Josh Allen thing, but and we're going to see here as they play, as they continue to play the schedule out, if Houston does it again, if Pittsburgh, for all we know, goes down the field and they kick a field goal late,
that
to take
would
the
be
lead,
more concerning.
You know,
to me,
I think that's where I think to your guys' point, it stands out more when you're not facing one of the best quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah, it does. I'm not going to argue that, at least on this.
Well, I think it makes Andy more aggressive, though.
Yeah.
Because for Andy to say, I'm not going for two, I trust the defense to do, I don't know when that changes, but is Andy going to become more aggressive and just say, screw it, I trust Patrick Mahomes because he's 15?
I think he answered it, though. Didn't he answer it yesterday, the fact that he didn't go for the two-point conversion?
I mean, on more of a consistent basis. Are we going to see it a lot more often?
I think, if I were him, I would also still have plenty of faith in my defense getting the job done. I mean, I would have plenty of faith. There's way too much of a track record with Steve Spagnuolo getting this defense figured out. Also, you're talking late game, I understand, but like in the first half when it seemed like the Chiefs maybe were going to have no answer for Amari Cooper, the second half, both defenses, give both sides credit, but third quarter, the Bills had nothing going. The Chiefs clearly made an adjustment defensively and figured it out. And then at the end of the game, when they had to have the two stops, they weren't able to get it. The offense in the third quarter was given the ball two times, and the offense did nothing with it. Yep. So it's a balancing act, that's for sure. The one thing that I don't know if it's concerning, but was interesting, we mentioned DeAndre Hopkins only getting 49% of the snaps.
That's weird.
If you look at how Buffalo and how they handled the Chiefs offensively, and I don't know if this is why Worthy ended up actually having the success, is because he's someone that can beat man-to-man coverage because of his speed and athleticism. If you look, the Chiefs...
Two straight games.
Going up against a team that played a ton of man defense, not zone. It's not a coincidence that's also a game in which Travis Kelce was basically a non-factor. We know his specialty is finding the soft spot in the zone. Nobody's better. Nobody's better at that. He just knows him and Mahomes, of course, have that relationship. Well, if the team's playing man-to-man, you got to just beat him. And that's not something Juju Smith-Schuster was able to do yesterday coming back from injury. It's not something that Travis Kelce was able to do. Hopkins had a couple really professional catches that only he's making. But I wonder if that is why Hopkins' snap count was so low? I know that to me is exactly why, if you're asking why was Travis Kelce not effective. And Noah Gray, of course, had a great game. That's because I think the man-to-man coverage.
I think that I would tell you that this is the most recent trend teams are going to do to try to slow down the Chiefs after they kind of found some offensive rhythm. Because before that, don't you remember? These conversations are so cyclical. Don't you remember what it was 2 years ago? It was they started doing cover two and the Chiefs can't beat the zone. They don't have any zone beaters, you know? And now the Chiefs personnel, DeAndre Hopkins is a zone beater. Travis Kelce is a zone beater. That's just generally what their offense is now designed around, especially because it's so tight end heavy and possession receiver heavy between Juju and Travis and DeAndre Hopkins, who all three were not a major factor in this game at all for the Chiefs. Yeah, there was one drive when those three guys mattered. And I would say outside of that, they were non-factors. I assume that teams will do this until you prove you can beat it, which probably means a whole lot more Xavier Worthy attempts coming. Why do you also think McColl looked good in that game? These are guys that are designed more in out in space, even short or under 10 yardage, beat your man stuff. McColl is pretty good at that. He's been pretty consistently good at that. So until the Chiefs prove that DeAndre Hopkins is just going to win his route one-on-one, or they start throwing contested stuff his way.
You know what solves a lot of this, though?
I don't think it's it.
And we don't even have to do a whole topic on it anymore because we did the last couple weeks. But just a quick mention in this conversation. This goes back to this offense is at their best when they're doing what?
Running the ball.
When they have some real resemblance of a rushing attack. They had 14 carries for 60 yards. And I know someone is now saying, hey, but Gold, they're like one of the better rush defenses in football. How are they supposed to figure this thing out? I still think they abandoned it too early. The lack of possessions definitely ends up impacting the overall carries. Like I didn't think Kareem Hunt with the 8 possessions was going to get 24 carries. I'm not asking for that, but 14 carries for 60. You know what, Kareem Hunt, his yards per carry yesterday was actually his best yard for carry in any game this year.
I know.
4.3. He'd been around like 3.3. So his actual yards per carry was about as good as it's been. He had one long run. For being fair in the conversation, that obviously adjusted the yards per carry. But I still think when this offense is at their best, it's when Kareem Hunt is able to run the football. And also, you know, when they actually went a little tempo. The drive that they had to have the touchdown, they got it. It was the best offensive drive, maybe for Mahomes in weeks.
It always goes to the same thing, which is anytime an offense is struggling, speeding things up seems to go a long way. And you always wonder to yourself, why not just do that sooner? And I think some of it is just the meticulous nature of Andy Reid, where he loves bleeding down to the very last second of the play clock. But the Chiefs do have to find a way to get more plays in. One thing that stands out about it over the last 3 weeks, while they're doing in the middle of this, is it takes them so long to score. They get way less drives per game than most teams in the NFL, so, which means no mistakes.
Yeah, typically, though,
any mistakes.
Typically, I think some of that is, I know we just had the defensive conversation, but complementary to the defense. Like, you're knowing how we said the comparisons to how Pittsburgh wins, like, and that's the reality of the situation, leaning on your defense. You also, in a way, want fewer possessions in the game because you trust your defense. I know it's backwards from how we think typically explosive Andy Reid offenses, but for 2 years now, this has been how they've won these games. Is, you know, being, you know, long sustained drives and leaning on the defense. I know that leaves you open for mistakes and holding penalties that kill drives, et cetera.
Yeah, little things that can kind of derail things. And I think if they had more, like, because the same thing that comes down to the scoring, when I'm like, God, they're a top 10 offense pretty much, right? Have been all year, just floating around 10th. That's just pretty much on aggregate where they've been for the first 11 weeks of this season. It's like, how can I get you to a five? How can I get you to a five? And I feel like just simply possessing the ball more and turning it over less would probably do it, because that's the whole other thing. Mahomes threw even more interceptions in this game, which is a whole other part of this conversation.
Coming up in 10 minutes, we'll get to the four things we think have to be better the next time they face Buffalo. We say the next time because, let's be real, there's a very good chance. Very good chance. I don't know if it's the AFC title game. I don't know if it's a divisional round weekend. Probably an AFC title game. It looks like we could be seeing these teams match up. But on Friday night, some of the attention was turned to the Jake Paul and Mike Tyson fight. And I know there's some people were like adamantly saying they were not going to watch. And I actually wanted to watch. 15 million people, I guess, ended up watching. I'm guessing that number was a lot lower because of the buffering issues. That was the story. Like, I did not watch Tyson Paul. I wanted to. I tried. Went on Netflix. It was free, although you're paying for it with your subscription, but it was not pay-per-view. And at 9:30, I tried to watch. And the co-main event, I heard, was great. Well, I didn't get to see any of that because it was buffering like I was I was putting in the CD-ROM AOL 90 minutes of internet or 90 hours or whatever it was and
I know
buffering.
I'll hear that sound for the rest of my life. Are you kidding?
Dial-up buffering disaster. And it has, you know, implications for Chiefs fans too. Even though if you're in the KC market, you'll be able to watch the Christmas Day game on Netflix locally.
We know a bunch of people aren't.
But there's a lot of you that aren't. And that's what everybody's mind was thinking. Is like, how's the NFL supposed to have games on Netflix? Because that was a disaster for Netflix on Friday night.
First off, just the fight its premise itself. I hate the idea of someone like a 30-year-old fighting a 6-year-old. That's ridiculous. This is a joke fight.
People were
that serious. They had all these dumb rules in place. It wasn't a real fight. But if you wanted to just watch it for the pure entertainment fact of Mike Tyson at 60 years old trying to get into a ring with a YouTube star who now turned boxer, you couldn't even get it because of that. That gives me massive concerns for Netflix on Christmas Day. Are you kidding? Now, good news is for us, you, me, Drew, right? You and I will be able to watch it on an antenna in the Kansas City market or watch it on YouTube TV in the Kansas City market, not streaming it through Netflix. But if this is their foray into live sporting events, I would say its first attempt failed miserably. Like, I mean, nobody could get access to it.
And this was not just not a small amount of people. Like, that's all social media was talking about. Now, yes.
And their app was gaslighting me. Like, your internet connection don't go. I'm like, I don't believe you.
Yeah, it was the only, I've watched plenty of streaming things. We've all watched on Peacock live events or whatever it may be. And it was definitely a Netflix issue because I really did want to watch. And I think to your point, though, what you were saying about you're watching a 58-year-old, 60-year-old boxing. I think if you approach it like knowing it's entertainment, you're good. No, like I don't think anybody's actually watching the fight thinking they're about to go see the greatest boxing match of their life. I entered it as like, this is intriguing. It's entertaining. And the fact that a lot of you listening wanted to see Mike Tyson knock Jake Paul the heck out. Mm-hmm. That's why we were watching. And the bets on the match, I told you I would never bet on a match like that because I just don't trust it, because we already heard from Jake Paul afterwards. Like, he was like, I couldn't knock him out. So like, and yet you could bet on him to knock somebody out. That's why I don't bet on those kind of fights. I just approach those from an entertainment factor and just like the intrigue with it. And that's why a lot of people were tuned in. But most of the bets were on Tyson to win because you had a lot of people that remembered Tyson from back in the day and they wanted to shut the kid up. That's all it was. And that was the intrigue for a lot of people.
You just had to know. He was almost 60. That fight was always going to suck.
He had a little juice in the first round.
Okay.
He was winded.
I just said he had a little juice in the first round.
I think
round.
They said he threw, what, 20 punches or something?
I saw the punch chart punches. Or whatever they call it.
It's pretty bad.
It was really, really bad. But I really couldn't watch. I had to just see highlights because of the dang buffering.
Bad.
Yeah. Oh, what a sound that is.
That's exactly.
That's a throwback. I thought we were on dial-up internet. Buffering.
You might as well have been.
It was an interesting... I mean, look, they have the NFL. They're supposed to get WWE... Like is pointed out over on Twitch, they're supposed to have like big WWE matches.
Look, I bet you they get this fixed. I would be stunned.
They have a
Netflix
month.
Is a big enough company.
They'll get some more servers or whatever.
I doubt they're gonna have that happen again. Like you just can't.
They have a month, so
they do. All right, up next, let's get back right into the Chiefs and what has to change for a next matchup that they have in January, most likely, and we'll talk about the rest of the AFC yesterday, including something that's never happened with a couple quarterbacks.